Building passive income and wealth through real estate is sponsored by our company, Perpetual Wealth Capital, where we help everyday people just like you build generational wealth and cash flow by passively investing in the very best multifamily opportunities. Download our free ebook, The Definitive Guide to Building Generational Wealth and Passive Cash Flow Through Multifamily Real Estate, by either clicking the link in the show notes or visiting thedefinitiveguidebook.com.
Hey investors, thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of Building Passive Income and Wealth Through Real Estate. Today, I'm sitting down with Aaron Wong. Now, Aaron has over a decade of investing and entrepreneurial experience. He has a strong track record of real estate investing, primarily focusing on small multifamily properties and now stepping into larger properties. Aaron has been recognized by Utah Business Q magazine as a 40 under 40 and as the best kept secret for leadership in a business startup that he founded and led. Aaron, we're excited to have you here and thanks for coming on the show.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Excited to be here.
So Aaron, tell us about you, your background and your investing history.
I've always been into investing, really dedicated that a lot to my wife. She's very much into investing, has always really pushed me into getting into a lot of that. So I've always been in like stock investing and been doing that for a long time. And then I would say my first foray into real estate probably came in right around 2013 when we were living in San Francisco and we bought our first house. I consider that more of a live and flip. It was a lot for us at that point in time. And so spent about 3 years just rehabbing the place, working on the backyard, especially. And then, you know, after about 3 years, we moved and then we rented it out for a couple more years. And then actually I had bought some land and another house where we were living at that time. And then about 2 years after we were renting out that San Francisco house, we decided to kind of rent in that spot where we had to decide if we're going to keep a house or do we sell it because we get that tax benefit of not have to pay the capital gains. And so after a lot of discussion, we decided let's just sell it and sold it right around, was it 2018, 2019-ish. I mean, we felt very fortunate for what we got out of it. And then my wife was kind of, at that time, you know, I was just like, I really liked the stock investing and I was really into like the FIRE, if you understand the FIRE community. She was like, we should do real estate. And I was like, well, you know, maybe we should do more stock. But I was listening to some podcasts and then they kept talking about bigger pockets and real estate. And so I decided, hey, you know what, let me check out this bigger pockets. And so that's kind of really what got me into real estate. I started listening to some podcasts and Brandon Turner webinars. And that's when I really decided I like multifamily. I think this is a really, that's where we got to go. And so we decided to go after the smaller multifamily. So about the four units is really what our target was. And so within a month, we closed on four separate properties. It was a fourplex, two duplexes, and then that was side by side. So I call it fourplex. And then another fourplex, all in Dayton, Ohio, and then St. Louis. And then a few months later, we did some in New York. And then so that's just kind of really how we started jumping into multifamily. It was kind of right at that point.
So you got into Brandon Turner's world, which is how a lot of people enter. And then that next thing, yes, you're in that rabbit hole and you're not getting out until you start buying some properties. But that's fantastic. I mean, so you went towards the smaller multifamilies and you hear a lot of the people talk about getting into multifamily because they want to be huge. They want thousands of units and it's a scale and it's great. What made you decide to at least start off in the smaller multifamily space? Like you said, between two and four units, a couple maybe a little bit bigger. What went into your decision of starting off smaller instead of going for that home run ball right off the bat?
I just thought that was just a little bit more manageable if it's smaller. Anything four units and below is still considered residential. And so you know, lending and financing would still be a little bit easier, more standard in that way. So that's really why we stuck it into the four units until it got more competitive. So
what are the differences like in terms of the underwriting for those smaller multifamily versus the large ones? Because, and now your portfolio has grown, I know you have a large property that you've recently acquired and you of course successfully underwrote that. What are some of the key differences in underwriting those maybe two to four plexes versus 100 or 200 or even 50 unit apartment building?
I think with like smaller multifamily, I feel like there's fewer complexities when it comes to a smaller multifamily underwriting. You can use, I know, BiggerPockets has some calculators. You can build a pretty simple spreadsheet and get the income, get some basic expenses, and then manage, get some CapEx, repairs and maintenance, and just you can manage that. But then when it comes to larger multifamily, there's a lot more to think about, a lot more factors to think about, especially valuations and just the way you look at a deal is a lot different. Yeah, it's great that you can scale. I mean, that's a great thing about multifamily is that it's all about the scale, but there's also a lot more factors to think about. Even though in small multifamily, you still have to look at like a lot of the economic factors, but I think more so in the larger multifamily, you have to look at a lot of those economic factors and make sure that that market is a market that is going to be sustainable for something that large. And so once you decide that that is something that is sustainable for that market, then the underwriting, usually it's a lot more complex. Like our spreadsheet for underwriting a larger multifamily, it's much more complex. There's a lot more factors to look at. For a small multifamily, you can probably just look at basic vacancy rates, like physical vacancy. But a large multifamily, there's economic vacancies, right? So there's physical vacancies, loss to lease, bad debts, concessions, these things that you have to underwrite for. And then expenses, depending on how large you get, you're going to have a lot more expenses like payroll, a lot of administrative and different types of taxes. So it's just a lot more to think about. Also, cap rates and lending is also pretty different too.
Absolutely. So when you're looking at those smaller properties, do cap rates or returns really factor into the pricing at all, or is it more so the neighborhood comps?
For us, when we're looking at the four units, right, those are still residential. So you can look at comps and you can look at another comp and pretty much find the value of it. But when it, obviously, when it comes to something larger, it's all income based. So you're going to look at the cap rates a lot more.
Got it. And tell me about the returns with smaller multifamily or four unit properties or below versus the larger scale properties. Are the returns better or worse in one or the other? Or is it more cash flow for one and appreciation for the other? What do the returns look like? And really with multifamily, the larger ones being so much more work and risk, do you see the payoff with larger properties being worth that?
So a smaller multifamily portfolio, when you look at returns, they're actually better. They can be better, but as far as the investors is concerned, but what's great about the larger multifamily is those returns is because when you get the large stuff, when you get into syndications and things like that, that's when as a sponsor, you know, your returns can actually be better, but you got investors and things like that. So when you're talking about, I guess, the overall returns, it depends on your market. It depends on what you're looking for. Because like for us, we look in the Midwest where we're very much into cash flow. So we're looking for cash flow returns, but we're not necessarily looking very much at appreciation, where there's other markets where you're not going to get a lot of cash flow.
Absolutely.
But you're going to get a lot more appreciation and forced appreciation in the end. So it kind of really depends. So I don't know if that's a good answer to your question, but it really depends on what you're looking for.
Absolutely. And so let's say you're looking for the cash flow, and I know you've found that is a geographical thing, but let's say that you're in one city. I know you mentioned Ohio that you have some mm-hmm. of those properties in.
Yep.
Would you expect cash flow to be better in a fourplex or in a larger property? Let's just say in that city.
You're saying like overall returns?
What right. Overall returns. Yeah.
For our fourplexes, for example, I mean, I can only take our example. So some of the properties that we bought in Ohio, our cash on cash was at least 20%, right? That's what we're averaging for our fourplexes. But you may not get a cash on cash return of a 20% on a larger multifamily. Happy. But depending if you're on the GP or the LP side, your returns could be better overall returns.
I want to change gears here and talk about your more recent acquisition. So you had stepped into the larger space of multifamily with recently acquiring. Tell us about your most recent deal, the larger property.
So it's in Lawton, Oklahoma. It's a 200 unit property that we acquired. It's on a 14 acre, basically compound. So we call it, it's a large compound, or I think there's about 12 or 14 buildings. So it's pretty large for 200 units.
So 200 units. Now, how did you go about acquiring that? Because that is an enormous leap for really any operator in this space, even very seasoned multifamily operators who have a couple of 50 to 100 unit properties. How did you leverage? Because we always hear that that experience is tough. Getting that first big multifamily deal is the toughest one, and then they come easier. Was your experience, I guess, enough to get that? Did you leverage mentors to get that opportunity? Or tell us about just the acquisition side of it.
Sure. So we were actually did not go in trying to get 200 units. So my partner and I were actually looking at right around 50 to 150 units at that point in time. And so really how this happened, we have to go back, is we were looking at another property, right? In that same area is a 52 unit we got under contract. So we're actually going out there. I had reached out to some property managers and just trying to get a feel for the market and try to set up property management. It was actually a property manager, that property manager that told us about this. But anyway, so the 52 that we had under contract, eventually it fell out of contract for one reason or another. And so the 200 unit just kind of came to us because we heard that it was about to go on market and there was a motivated seller. So the seller we knew was out of state and they wanted to get out of the deal. So really how it fell into our laps was they were motivated. And luckily, they lived in the same city as my partner. And so my partner actually reached out to the seller and to say, hey, this is who we are. We like your property. I mean, that time we didn't have a huge portfolio. I mean, nothing near 200, but we had enough experience. I mean, we had already closed on it, probably close to a dozen deals already, but they were smaller. So it helped that I think we had that experience. Plus, we brought on a partner that had experience. And that helped as well for the experience, especially for the lenders.
Absolutely. So you didn't really find that there was a pushback because, hey, you don't have anything else that's 100 or 200 units. Your smaller multifamily was sufficient to make the seller believe that you were capable of closing on the property.
Yeah. I mean, to this seller, they were comfortable enough that we had almost a dozen deals under our belt, but smaller. I mean, I've talked to others that are in the same boat that obviously they don't think we have enough experience for something that's like 180 units. But I think for this particular seller, they felt comfortable with what we had.
Absolutely. And now you won't ever have to have that conversation again, because now you have the 200 unit and you had gotten it. It was listed, but it was pre-market, because my feeling is if that thing would have hit the market or it's on LoopNet or something, you may not be that buyer because somebody else is, quite frankly, could overpay for it. You just can't get competitive there. What do you attribute to? Part of it is the timing, right? You were looking in the market and you just happen to have these conversations and putting yourself in a position to get that opportunity just over and over and over again. Was there anything that you did that was enormously compelling that made the seller just say, yes, we'll just take this right now. Don't even take it to market. This offer, this buyer is good enough. Or do you think it was just the timing that they were just happy to get into contract?
I think it was a combination. We wouldn't have never known about this deal unless I just happened to tell the property manager what we're looking for. Because you always hear people say, just tell everyone what you're doing. And this deal came because I was telling everybody what we're doing. So we told the property manager, this is what we're looking for. This is what we're looking at trying to buy. And she said, look, here's the property that I know one of the brokers, they're looking to list it. So number one was we talked to someone about it. Number two is I think that the seller was just in a place where they wanted a certain price for the property. Sure. We underwrote it at that price. We felt like actually we were overpaying a little bit at that time, but we're like, I think we can do it. And we're just like, okay, we'll give you what you're asking. And so we didn't really fight it. We just like, okay. So I think that also helped was that the seller was motivated.
What were some of the levers that you pulled there to make the deal? Because some of it has to do with what's the business plan. You can sometimes justify paying a higher price and getting more competitive by changing the business plan. So how did things change to where your mindset was, no, that's too much, to now we can afford that? Was it a business plan change, or did you get with the property manager and see, hey, what can we do about expenses? Or what did you do to shift that mindset from that's too much to now this is a good deal for us?
100%, it was our property management. Finding a really good property manager, because we don't live in Oklahoma. Finding a really, really good team members is essential, especially a property manager that knows what they're doing, that's familiar with that market. So she actually helped us come up with a good pro forma of, hey, this is what I believe I can get for rents. This is what I believe your expenses are going to be based upon my experience in this market. And just somebody that just knows what they're doing is so important. It helped us immensely. And also we have another team member who's like a construction general manager for us that went with us and looked at everything and says, okay, this is what I believe it's going to cost us to get this rehab done. And so just having all that together and then putting it into our spreadsheet and making the analysis said, wow, we believe the property is going to be worth this much, which we're done. This is a great deal all around. So I think it was a combination.
And then those red cells turn green and you're ready to go and it's time to make the move.
Absolutely.
Was this the first deal that you had raised money for? Or did you raise money for previous smaller multifamilies?
This was the first time we had to raise something this large. Yeah.
Got it. How was that? Was it mostly friends and family, or did you branch out to market the property for accredited investors? Because going from the smaller multifamily into the larger ones, a lot of people are going to say that the funding and the raising, especially your first time with those larger scale properties, is going to be tough. So how did you overcome some of the challenges with fundraising, and what were some of those challenges?
That's still and always was one of the biggest obstacles of us actually pulling the trigger was, I mean, the raise wasn't huge. The raise was 2.5. It started off at 2.5 and ended up around 2.7, but not a huge raise, but large enough that, I mean, I've never raised that much money before. It was large enough that we had a lot of concerns. Like, where's this money going to come from? We had some friends. We believe that we probably could have clawed and scratched our way to get most of it, just because my partner has very good connections. And, you know, I had some connections that were interested, but really it just came down to finding a partner that could do it. And again, this comes down to telling everyone what you do. So my partner just happened to go to a bat mitzvah of a friend of his. We just flew in one day, flew out the next day. He was telling the stories like he didn't want to go, but he went. When he got there, his buddy that he was going to the bat mitzvahs, he introduced his brother-in-law. And brother-in-law was into real estate and had done some syndications. And a friend was just introducing him to everybody. And this brother-in-law heard what we're doing. And he says, hey, I'm interested. I really wanted to expand further into the Midwest, and heard about our deal. And it just kind of went from there. He says, I believe I can help you raise at least half of this money. I think it was half the money. And so they ended up helping us raise a lot of the money, at least half of it. And so it just came down to just finding the right team members and finding the right people to be able to help you raise that money.
That's crazy. You guys are the masters of being in the right place at the right time and creating opportunities. It's great because some people look at that and say, oh, well, you got lucky that you found the deal. Then you got lucky that you found that partner. But no, it's like you said, about putting yourself out there, tell every single person what you do and why you do it and why you love doing it. Then these things naturally happen and you're going to find that person, that connection to make it happen. Was that connection made before or after you were already in contract? So did you pull the trigger, sort of building the parachute as you were falling out of the plane, or did you make the PSA final once you got that cash connection?
We were actually already under contract. It's a pretty long story, very interesting story. I don't know if you have time for it today, but yeah, we were already under contract when we brought them on. And again, like you said, we just tried to tell everybody what we're doing and just kind of leave in the hands of whoever it is that can help you. So that's kind of what happened. We feel very fortunate for it.
Absolutely. That's fantastic. So tons and tons of value there. I love your journey and I love the story. And I think the listeners can really take away, put yourself out there as much as you possibly can. Tell everybody, no matter what. I mean, I told my parents, I told long lost relatives, I told people that I lost connections with. You just have to get out there and put yourself out there. Make yourself be uncomfortable for a little bit, talking about yourself and what you're doing, because it's a little uncomfortable at times. It's going to pay off and then you're going to create your own luck. And the next thing you know, you have the right connections you need to pull the trigger on a massive, massive deal. So that's fantastic.
Absolutely.
So Aaron, I want to ask you a question that I ask people on the show. So a lot of the listeners and a lot of people who start in this business started off part-time. And so if you could go back in time and start your investment journey over from day one, with all the knowledge you have now, but only 1 hour a day and $500 a month to commit to this business, what would you do?
That's a very interesting question. So I think what I would do is I would know what my strengths and weaknesses are, which I know what my strengths and weaknesses are. I know what I'm good at, what I'm not. Number one, I would spend that hour every day trying to find people that have the strengths where I'm weak and partner with those people. And build a team around to be able to, like, for example, like I do a lot of, for our partnership, I do a lot of the underwriting and asset management. So I'm going to find someone that does acquisitions, which we do. That's how I would spend my hour. I would just focus on what I'm good at. And then once I'm able to partner with somebody that's good at what I'm not, they're going to focus on that area and to build that team out until you have a good team of people to be able to work with. And I would spend that $500 on finding like a virtual assistant or someone that'd be able to handle jobs that I can't or don't want to handle, so that it can free me up to be able to do other things. So that's what I would do.
I love it. And we're in the process of hiring virtual assistants now. And so I love the thought process and really leveraging your time to large multifamily space isn't really one designed for one person to do it all or take it all down. Or maybe you do, but you're going to cap out pretty quickly at what you can manage and where you can go. That's fantastic. Aaron, thank you so much for coming on. Listeners, if you haven't already, head down to the show note and download our free ebook, The Definitive Guide to Building Generational Wealth and Passive Cash Flow Through Multifamily Real Estate. And if you want to partner with us on our future deal, either as a limited partner or a general partner, head to our website, perpetualwealthcapital.com/partner, or click the link in the show notes. Now, Aaron, how can people get in touch with you?
So if you want to get in touch with me, definitely visit our website. It's www.gwcapitalinvest.com. We've got an ebook there about FIRE through real estate and really focus on helping passive investors. So we've got a lot of blogs and articles about passive investors out there.
Absolutely, Aaron. Thank you so much. And thank you for listening wherever you're at in the world right now. And we hope to see you on the next episode.